south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, let me add a few more thoughts to this Latin residency controversy that we've been talking about for the last five or six shows. Now, you know that in most cases, you'll get temporary residency first. Then, if you're a good boy or girl and you don't get in any trouble in the country that you got your temporary residency, after a year or two, you'll move right on up to permanent residency. And I'm sure you'll all be model would-be citizens and all that. And with permanent residency, which comes pretty much automatically after that, you'll have to pay a few fees to your lawyer, etc., and a fee to the government. Not a lot, generally. $1,500 or much less, depending on the country. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up again is because there's a bit of confusion. People are asking me, what about a police report when you go for the permanent residency? Is one required again? Because you do need one when you go for your temporary residency. Well, the fact is, you'll need a police report, all right, but you won't need it from the States or from whatever country you're coming from. This time, you'll be getting it from the country that you've got your temporary residency in. So, that said, your lawyer and his office helpers will do all that. They'll go down to the local, municipal, or federal police. It's not necessary you go down. They can request it. It won't cost more than $10. And you'll get a clear report. Actually, you'll get two clear reports. You'll get a report from the municipality and from the federal police showing that you haven't committed a crime or been a bad boy or girl in the local district you're supposed to be living in. Whether you're living there or not is another thing. Because, like I said, depending on the country, there is a requirement that you spend some time there. Some cases, only one day a year. Anyway, again, if you've got your temporary residency and are moving to permanent residency, you'll have to get a police report, actually two police reports. But your lawyer's office will handle all those things for you. Now, here's something about residency we didn't talk too much about, but it does apply in some cases. So, listen up. As it turns out, a lot of retired first world people like to get into these pensionado programs like they have in Panama and Costa Rica and Guatemala, etc., where if you can prove that you're getting some kind of income, probably Social Security or a pension, anywhere from $800 to $1,500 a month, then you can qualify for pensionado status. Now, whether you want that kind of special retirement residency status versus the usual temporary residency leading to permanent residency is another matter, because there are advantages and drawbacks to it. So let's talk about this pensionado thing for a second. So after you've got all the official paperwork in hand, certified from up in the States that you're actually getting that pension, or Social Security, or some kind of trust income, or whatever, that meets your Latin country's monthly income requirement, your lawyer will take you by the hand and you'll jump through those hoops and you'll get pensionado residency. So what's the advantage of that? Well, normally you'll be able to bring certain things into the country duty-free. Like, for example, a car every 3 to 5 years in some cases. Again, depending on the country. And note, I always say it's better to sell your car up in the States and buy one down here in Latin America to avoid the shipping costs, which can be anywhere from about $1,500 to $2,500. As well as the duties and taxes and import charges, which can run 30% or more of the blue book value of your car. So, for example, if you're bringing in a car that's worth $10,000, let's round it off and say you're paying about $1,500 for shipping and $3,000 for the taxes and custom duties, or around $4,500 total. So then wouldn't it be much better and much less hassle to sell that car up in the States for $10,000? Then when you came down to Peru or Ecuador or Costa Rica, wherever, buy a very similar car. In fact, you probably could buy almost the exact model for around $10,000 plus what they call the IVA or the value-added tax down here, which is anywhere from around 10 to 20%, again, depending on which country you're coming down to. For example, if you're in Honduras or Nicaragua or Guatemala, it's around 10 to 12%, so you'd be paying around $11,000 or so for the same car, which is much better than paying $14,000 or $15,000 to have an existing car shipped down. Not to mention all the problems and headaches that go with shipping a vehicle. A lot of people do it, but it's not all that easy. I'm sure you get the point. However, there are some countries like Argentina and Brazil that whether you ship your car from the States or buy one down there, it's kind of a no-win situation because the taxes are so damn high on cars, you could easily pay double for what you'd pay for the same car in the States. And if you ship it down, you'll not only pay shipping fees, twice what you'd pay to Central America because of the distance, some South American countries will actually charge you that extra heavy tax on the shipping charges too, not just the value of the car. Which is yet another reason I don't recommend Argentina or Brazil for new expats. The fact is they've got some killer import taxes down there, which I explained in great detail in a show over a year ago now. You might remember that one where I was talking about buying cars and trucks in Argentina, including the case of a Toyota Hilux pickup truck. I picked that because it's a very standard rugged vehicle you see all over Latin America. I mentioned how you can buy one of those in Nicaragua or Salvador or Guatemala for around 20 to 25 grand, and in Argentina, you won't be able to touch one for under 50 grand. Anyway, like I said, over the years, a lot of retired folks have been getting in on these pensionado plans, especially some years ago when these retirement pension residencies really did have a lot of cool perks. Like, for example, in some Latin countries, they'll let you bring in a container full of household goods with no duties whatsoever either. And remember, if you have an average 1,600 square foot house in the States and you're not a pack rat, you can fit pretty much everything in a 40-foot shipping container. Now, to ship a full container like that from Chicago to, let's say, Panama might cost you around $2,500. That's everything fully insured. Now, normally I say don't bring a container down because in the end, the taxes and the shipping will kill you. However, if you're a pensionado and you do have that perk, I would say it really could be a good deal to send down your household goods and furniture, etc., versus having a gigantic yard sale in Cleveland and buying new down here. Like I said, normally I say sell it all and come down with a handful of suitcases because you'll pay the $2,500 shipping cost plus almost always much more than $2,500 in taxes on what you've got inside. Now, what seems to be eminently true is that expat gringo males can jettison practically everything up in the States. They really don't have too much attachment to their junk unless it's tools, guns, trophies, mounted moose heads, and signed baseball artifacts. Yes, we men are simple-minded, uncomplicated creatures. However, women, they're the ones that kick, scream, and cry when you tell them it's time to sell everything and move. It's just so hard to part with those color-coordinated drapes, lampshades, and coffee table books. So men, you're just going to have to grin and bear it and tell her when she gets here, you'll buy her a shitload of shoes. Now, if that sounds too sexist, I got that quote directly from an expat gringa who told me she made her husband do just that. They had a big rummage sale, and before they left, he made her sell her Hummels, her Wedgwood, and her House Beautiful magazines, so that was the least he could do. So if Shakespeare didn't say, shoes doth soothe the savage beast, well, he should have. But where were we? Oh, yeah. We were talking about that duty-free container that some pensionados are able to get as a perk. Well, the problem is, Latin countries are slowly but surely phasing out all those extra perks for pensionados. Besides that, there are some real negatives to the pensionado plan. First of all, you won't be legally able to work in that country. Sure, you'll be able to set up a business and have others work for you, but you can't actually be on the books as an employee. And of course, there are many other ways to get around that, with SA corporations, offshore banking, and internet companies. So it's really not a big problem. In effect, you're just prohibited from working at a regular company like Walmart, McDonald's, Costco, or Starbucks. Yeah, and that's why you came down to Latin America, right? To spend your golden years working at the Golden Arches or cleaning tables at Starbucks. So you can't legally work on the books, big deal. But the bigger reason and the real kicker is that most of the pensionado programs will only let you maintain residency. And unlike your standard temporary residency program that leads to permanent residency, and then permanent residency leading to a passport if you wish, with pensionado residency, you're not allowed to become a citizen. Thus, no passport, ever. You'll always be stuck as just a pensionado. So do have your Latin lawyer in the country you wish to become a resident. Check out the ins and outs of the pensionado program. You just might not want to go that way. Remember, Latin countries set up these pensionado programs to be a way of you bringing money down from the States, pensions and otherwise, and spending it all in their country. It's all about knowing that there's some so-called wealthy or rich gringo spending money, improving the economy, and giving jobs to locals, etc., with dough and assets coming in from a foreign source. Nothing wrong with that except for the fact they won't let you get a passport or have citizenship. And the reason for that is obvious. If you get your citizenship, you're in, you've got your passport, you're a citizen, and you no longer have to prove any money coming into the country from an outside source. That said, there are certain small advantages to becoming a pensionado. Most countries with these pensionado programs publish lists of benefits. For example, Panama. They're mostly items and services you can get at a discount as a pensionado by flashing your pensionado card. For example, here's Panama's current list. 50% off entertainment anywhere in the country, including movies, theaters, concerts, sporting events, etc. 30% off bus, boat, and train fares. 25% off airline tickets. 50% off hotel stays Monday through Thursday. 30% off Friday and Saturday hotel stays. 25% off restaurants. 15% off fast food restaurants. 15% off hospital bills if no insurance applies. 10% off prescription medicines. 20% off medical consultations. 15% off dental and eye exams, 20% off professional and technical services, 50% off closing costs for home loans, 25% off residential power up to 600 kilowatt, 25% off for residential phone service charges, 25% off residential water bills up to 30 bucks. However, and here's the big however, you don't always get those discounts. Sometimes you gotta barter and haggle with people. Often you have to jump through a number of hoops. For example, getting the 25% off the power up to 600 kilowatts and 25% off the phone service and water bills. Most pensionados I know in Panama tell me they have to have their lawyer help them out with that stuff because, well, most pensionados don't speak Spanish. And I mean it. You try to go down to your water, your phone, or your electric company in Latin America and try to get anything done if you don't know any Spanish. It ain't gonna happen. So at first, if you think all those discounts are too good to be true, some of them really are. Oh, and speaking of Panama, those of you listeners out there interested in residency, they do, as most Latin countries do, have an instant residency program for investors. Turns out, if you invest $300,000 in a bank CD, yep, I said $300,000, for a minimum of 3 years, or in a business or land or real estate, in a so-called qualified investment, in your name, of course, that'll entitle you to permanent residency, and then you have to wait 5 years or more to get that citizenship and passport. Now, remember, in past shows, I said there were other Latin countries where you only had to invest 50 grand, and in some cases, all you really had to do was to get your Latin lawyer in that country to create an SA corporation, which would get you going right away on temporary residency, and in some cases, permanent residency. Now, with that, we're not talking about the pensionado programs. We're talking about straight temporary or permanent residency. So my question always is, why would you want to lock up $300,000 to get a Panama residency when you can go to a country like Honduras or Nicaragua, Guatemala, and get the same deal for a mere fraction of that? In fact, in some Latin countries, you could deposit $50,000 in a CD for however long it takes for you to get your residency processed, and then you could pull it out. Because, hint, hint, Latin governments don't have the means or the manpower to check where your money is after you've applied for residency. In fact, they never check the source, the bank. You have to show them, the government officials, the paperwork from the bank. Remember, in Latin government offices, we're talking about mostly lazy, albeit happy slugs, sitting on their dead asses, either watching the clock or watching soccer games. I'm not kidding you. Come down to any Latin country and have a look at pretty much any government office. Stick your head in and have a peek, and you'll see what I mean. And by the way, in the end, whether you get a Panama passport, Costa Rica, Honduran, or Nicaraguan passport, turns out one Latin passport does not give you a big advantage over another, as in, for example, visa-free travel to other countries. So again, I'm asking you listeners out there, if you even have $300,000 to drop on a program like that. And remember, if you're a couple, it's going to be $600,000 cash. I mean, come on. How many of us can loosen up that kind of dough to throw into an investment in a foreign country? Why do it when 50 grand or less will do in many other Latin jurisdictions? So, like I said, The same sort of investor residency programs exist in all Latin countries. And even in a country like Chile, where they say they don't have investor residency programs, if you put a minimum of $200,000 in a Chilean bank, let me assure you, when you apply for residency, it'll fly right through. Oh, and by the way, a passport from Chile is one of the few Latin passports that allows visa-free travel to the U.S. and Canada. To which I say, whoopee. I mean, really, who's trying to go back there? You're all trying to get out, right? So then, what other Latin countries are not great choices because of high costs and such? For example, Costa Rica, for a mere $200,000 placed in a long-term CD in a Costa Rican bank, or property or shares or projects which are deemed of national interest, will get you that permanent residency going. And of course, they have a pensionado program too, and you have to prove an income from a foreign source of $1,000 or more, and it's got to be coming from a retirement or a pension program. And if you're not of retirement age, you can still become a pensionado, but in this case, you're called a rentista, and you have to prove $2,500 a month from a foreign income source for at least 2 years. And that's just to give you an idea of some of the more expensive Latin countries to get your residency in. That said, now for the idiotic moron Latin report of the week. Just yesterday, when I was driving in a busy section of a big town, a brand new $100,000 plus Porsche Carrera pulled up right next to me. And since the traffic was moving at about 3 miles an hour, with the next five succeeding stoplights, he'd be right next to me, revving his motor and emitting sounds that only cars like Porsches and Ferraris can. Of course, we gringos know that having a car like that's an idiot move in Latin America. One, because you're a huge target for thieves and no-goodniks. Two, because you can't park it anywhere without some guy with a 25-year-old rusted-out beater whose car is worth less than your paint job, scratching your ride when he opens his door. Then there's the ever-present kids and adolescent leaners who'll scratch your car with the metal cleats on the ass of their pants. Not to mention, a car like that sits so low that every one of those billions of potholes and speed bumps are lethal or permanently disabling. Which, of course, means you can't really drive the thing at speed, or drive at night for that matter, since potholes and speed bumps are everywhere and roads are badly lit. Which is why, by the way, only thieving politicians and narcos with money to burn drive those things. So anyway, this guy's next to me. We're going 5 miles an hour at most for about 20 blocks. And finally, we get to a spot where he can break loose, and he heads on out ahead, weaving like a snake through all those regular cars and junkers. But really, it's not unusual to see morons driving cars like that. But what happened next was unusual. Suddenly, a brand new jet black Dodge Ram whipped in from somewhere behind and was alongside of me for a second. So, with all the windows down, I could see there were four bodyguards in suits and sunglasses and earbuds that probably didn't work. And they were in a hell of a hurry, but getting nowhere at 3 to 5 miles an hour too, honking away, trying to get everybody to move over and let them by. Which, in that kind of traffic, is pretty impossible. Then, for some reason, because of the traffic flow, I got ahead, and the guy whipped right behind me, and then at the next stoplight, he tried to pass me right in the intersection, but almost got nicked, so he swept right behind me again. Then the driver laid on the horn, and all the bodyguards started waving their hands for me to move over, like they had some important business, and I didn't. Which is when I purposely slowed down and aggravated him even more. Then they found an opening again, and as they passed me, the guy in the right front hit my right side mirror and collapsed it. You know, those side view mirrors fold in, but when somebody else does it, it pisses you off. So I honked a couple times and gave him every one of my fingers as they continued to swerve and weave and get ahead of people car by car. Now get this, about 5 minutes later, the traffic lights ahead weren't working anymore. They were flashing yellow, and there were traffic cops on the street directing. That's when I realized these four bodyguard shit for brains were in charge of protecting that dickhead in the Porsche. I mean, come on, can you believe it? A guy buys a brand new Porsche. A guy so morbidly pretentious that he has to have four bodyguards follow him around wherever he goes. What a pathetic excuse for a human, huh? I mean, you really have to see stuff like this to believe it. And if you think that's the limit, how about this one? Often, especially on weekends, when you're in a big Latin American city, you'll see the occasional upper-class Latin wealthy person or persons running down the street in their expensive first-world jogging outfits. All right, you see, nothing wrong with that. But when you see one or two of these guys being followed by not one, but two black bulletproof Mercedes SUVs, each loaded with bodyguards, I tell you, even if you're an atheist, you hope and pray there's such a thing as karma. Now, regular Latin folks, you gotta know, don't even see this as unusual. They grew up with it. But us gringos, most of us who've never seen a single bodyguard in our lives, we just think there's a screw or two loose in the universe. And sometimes a couple of trucks full of bodyguards aren't following a jogger. They're following their socially deranged bosses and or their kids, driving their $3,000 pedal bikes in their $500 fluorescent racing getups and matching helmets, all the while stealing a whole lane in the road and blocking traffic. Now that's when you wish you had a thin paper bag full of cow feces. But alas, odoriferous projectiles like that are not always at hand when you need them. Too bad, huh? Well, enough of that rant. Let's talk about gold. The fact is, every expat should have some on hand in his possession, that and or some physical silver, simply as an insurance policy when things really break apart. That said, how about this news coming out of India? Turns out, a recent Air India flight was grounded at takeoff in a bomb scare. And after they'd gone through all the passengers and the belongings, they found out that 80% of those passengers had an ounce or more of gold on them. They were either wearing it, carrying it, or had small gold coins sewed into their clothing. Which brings us back to that commonly asked question, how much actual gold can you safely take out of the country through airports, etc.? Now, just recently I heard some talk that you can't take certain forms of gold out of the U.S. And it turns out, for now anyway, that's just a rumor. Now, in fact, the way the so-called monetary instrument law is these days, the pertinent amount is still $10,000 worth of monetary instruments. If you're taking any more than that out of the country, you have to report it on the appropriate form. And if you do that, you're complying so you can take it out of the country. Now, according to the official U.S. government and treasury doctrine, gold in and of itself, and we're not talking about U.S. gold coins that have an actual face value stamped in them here. Anyway, if you're carrying non-coin gold or precious items, it's not considered a monetary instrument, so it's not subject to reporting, at least under U.S. customs regulations. Now, think of it. If the law wasn't written that way, any woman traveling with several ounces of gold jewelry or with a string of pearls or a gold or platinum cigarette case, you know, people used to have those things. How about all those over-the-top people in the world who have lots of jewelry, you know, 4-carat diamond pinky rings and all that? Think of all those wealthy old dowagers and their massive necklaces. Then all that would be subject to reporting requirements too, yet as of now anyway, that's not the case. And believe me, if you fly a lot or run around with an upscale crowd, you'll notice that a lot of ladies, especially older ones, have expensive jewelry and they're always flying here and there to sun and fun places. And that stuff doesn't sit in the drawer at home. It goes with them to Vegas, Venice, Florence, Cleveland, and Miami. Otherwise, why would they even have it? So do you think they're filling out those forms when they're flying through airports with that stuff? Nope. Not yet, anyway. Now, the weather. I mean, now for an email. And in the interest of privacy, we won't reveal the name on this one. Hi, Johnny. Thanks for the report on Guatemalan residency. Me and my wife had already started that process based on the information from your podcast, and here's what we experienced thus far. We received a, quote, good conduct report from our county sheriff's department for each of us. Thanks for the info regarding the necessity for each of our names having to be exactly the same on the report and passport. In the first reports issued, our names did not exactly match. So we had to wait for new reports to be issued, which took a week and cost $0. Not bad. Then each report was notarized by one of the employees at the sheriff's department, cost again $0. Then took the records to the office of the secretary of our state, and then they wouldn't accept them. The notary stamp had to be certified by the county from which the stamp was issued, 40 minutes away. However, the certification process only took a few minutes, cost $3 a report. Then we returned to the office of the secretary of our state to have our good conduct reports apostilled. I can never say that word, otherwise known as authenticated, which also only took a few minutes, cost $10 per report. Next, we looked at the website for the Guatemala consulate serving our state and could not find a document to complete the legalization process. However, there were instructions partially on the Guatemalan embassy site and partially on the consulate website. So we got it all together. So then we sent the reports to the Guatemalan consul general serving our state. Though not instructed to do so, I also included a cover letter requesting legalization of the reports. So the reports were legalized and mailed back on the date received. Total cost, $23 per report plus mailing costs. Now note, I also sent the Guatemalan consulate a letter that was translated into Spanish explaining all this with the help of SpanishDictionary.com. And here's what I had translated to Spanish from English. Esteemed Consul General, I'm writing to you to ask you to legalize the enclosed good conduct reports for myself and my wife. As instructed on the consulate website, each document has been notarized, certified, and apostilled. Also included are a money order for $20 USD as a processing fee for the two documents, prepaid return envelope, and a piece of cardboard to aid in protecting the documents in the return envelope. Thank you in advance for your time and effort processing this request. Then he says, thanks for all that you share, and I hope you find this feedback helpful or at least reaffirming for your listeners. And by the way, this is from a couple that attended my July 2014 Latin American seminar. So as you can see at these seminars, we really do follow through and help people to get what they want to accomplish. And in this first step for them, it was residency. That said, my July 2015 Latin American seminar is going to kick off in a little less than a month. So all you listeners on the fence out there, just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin seminar link, and check it out. In fact, I'd be willing to bet a lot of you listeners out there who sent me emails saying you can't make it this time, you'll come to another seminar in the future, I bet in a year's time, you'll really wish you would have come to this one. Things are looking worse and worse up north, and you can bet very soon, Uncle Sam and his crooked big brother cronies are going to make it very difficult for any one of you guys to leave the country with your assets intact. Pretty soon, Uncle Sam is not going to let his milk cows leave the barn.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old